So, I hope you can hear me, and welcome to the JobWise and KBL solicitors webinar. It'd be ever so useful, guys, if you can hear me, if you could just type on your chat box below that you can hear us. Otherwise, we're going to be talking to ourselves. So if you could say hi, we'd love to see you. And also just a point to say that please feel free to raise some questions with our experts here, and oh look, we've got a hi Michelle, nice to
Hi,
hear from
Michelle.
you, and thank you for that. And if you other guys are there and you just say hi, we can see that you can hear us all. So let me just make some introductions as we start to settle in and people start to join us right now. So firstly, thank you for joining us, and as you know, this is a webinar designed to talk about our post-pandemic workplace. It's business, but not as usual, preparing for a post-pandemic workplace. And let me introduce you to our speakers today. So firstly, I'd like to welcome Sarah Collier, who is the head of the, I've lost my notes just for a second. There she is. So she's the chief partner of KBL. And welcome, Sarah. Perhaps it'd be useful if you could just explain your background to us, Sarah, as partner and head of employment at KBL Solicitors.
Yes, basically I have been working in employment for over 10 years now. So my mainstay is acting for businesses, holding the hand through all kind of employment issues. Obviously there's tribunal work, there's drafting of documents, but I think in the main it's day-to-day advice, and I've seen so much of that in lockdown, as you can imagine.
Well, it's great to have you here, and I'm very grateful for your participation today. And I'd also like to say a big hello, of course, to our other guest speaker today, Leanne Goodwin, who is the Managing Director of JobWise. Hi, Leanne.
Hi, Paul. Hi, everyone.
And Leanne, you started with JobWise in 1993, so just a few years ago, right? And I believe you were in the banking sector originally.
I was.
You became the Managing Director of JobWise in 2011. Now, I don't think many people know this. We only discovered this when we were talking earlier. But Leanne, you've competed with your horses all over the country, and at the Horse of the Year show in Germany. So, in Germany. So you've certainly been an extremely busy person, not least the fact you were the winner of the Corporate Businesswoman of the Year award. That was Northwestern Isle of Man in November 2011. And you're also, I believe, involved in a charity, is that right? The Bolton Lads and Girls Club.
It is, yes. I like being busy, as you can tell. Yeah, that's me.
Well, welcome, guys. My name is Paul Jacobs. I'm the Managing Director of Love Work Life Consulting. And I've been in the recruitment industry for something in the order of 44 years now. It's quite a lengthy period of time. I started in about 1886. I'm best known, I suppose, for being the former CEO of Office Angels. I had 120 offices and about 650 staff around the country. And I started my working life working for the old Alfred Marx Bureau many years back. Some of you guys may remember them. They were a very well-known recruitment business in its day. But for the last 11 years, I've been managing my own management consultancy business, working with a whole range of businesses all over the UK and abroad, providing business coaching and mentoring support. So enough about us. Let's talk about why we're here. So I'd like to turn, if you don't mind, Sarah, to you with the very first question, if that's possible.
Yes, of course.
But we've got a very interesting question here. So let's just read this out. We've seen the coronavirus job retention scheme has implemented a number of changes from the 1st of July. Can you just perhaps outline those changes to the CJRS for us, please, Sarah?
Yeah, of course. I think before I go through the flexible furlough scheme, which we've seen has changed from the 1st of July, it's helpful just to go back and just analyse what's happened with this coronavirus job retention scheme, which of course, has been a massive lifeline for businesses since March. So the government had originally announced this on the 20th of March, and we saw the portal coming out within a month so that businesses could start putting those claims through and recouping the salaries back from employees that they had furloughed. And of course, the scheme was there to sort of, as an intention really, to avoid mass redundancies across the country and to alleviate that pressure on businesses in continuing paying, you know, wages to employees in this crisis. And we saw the Coronavirus Act 2020 brought in within record time, really. And on the back of that, we've seen changes upon changes to this coronavirus job retention scheme brought about by three Treasury directions. And what we're focusing on now is the latest of those, which took effect from the 1st of July. And as I said, you know, flexible furlough is what I'm going to refer to it as, but it's the latest version. The old scheme we saw end on the 30th of June. And as you may recall, that required businesses to place their staff on furlough on a full-time basis for 3-week periods. So it was very, very restrictive. And, it's not great for businesses where they might have employees that need to dip in and out of work. And whilst we've seen, you know, I think it's protected 9.3 million jobs and just, you know, hugely assisted business, that rigidity, you know, I think the government decided as it had started and as we could see a road out of lockdown needed to change. So from the 1st of July, flexible furlough is now allowing businesses to bring their employees back on a part-time basis and effectively allowing those staff to work whenever on whatever shift pattern works for the business, whereby the business is only required to pay the wages for them employees for the time that they work, and they can be furloughed for the remainder of the time with the government picking up the tab. So, you know, that rigidity has disappeared and we've now got this flexible scheme, which, as I said, I think the clients that I'm acting for have found has been a massive help as they are finding their businesses getting back up and running slowly to start to slowly bring their workforce back without this huge wage bill that would apply if they did that. So just a practical example of how it could work. You know, you may have had an employee prior to furlough working 5 days a week, 40 hours a week. Under the flexible furlough scheme, you may find initially you only really want them back 2 days a week. And you can do that where the business pays their wages for them 2 days that they're working, and following, you know, the remaining 3 days are picked up by furlough, and that can change week by week. I know certain clients, for example, have used this flexible furlough scheme to bring certain employees back at month end when they need that account support and actually less of them within the month. So what we've also seen from the government is this sort of petering down of the coronavirus job retention scheme. So initially they were covering 80% of employees' wages, which meant that the employer didn't have anything to pay because they'd in advance got their employees to agree this 20% cut during the furlough period. Whereas going forward from the 1st of August, we are seeing that employers will then have to start to contribute towards national insurance contributions and pension contributions for the month of August, so a little bit more. And then from September, they're having to pay 10% of their employees' pay for the time that they are furloughed, plus the NI and pension contributions. And in October, it goes to a 20% pay. So the government are paying less and less towards this furlough scheme, but it's still there to help and provide the support. There are caps on those figures for September and October, but I am going to provide an information sheet following today's session that has those on. Just to state what they are, the employer is required to pay up to 10% of the employee's pay for September, but that is capped at £312.50, and the government cover the remaining 70% of their pay. And for October, where it's 20% contribution from the employer, that's capped at £625 gross per month. So as I said, those figures will be on there. Just some points really to note about flexible furlough before I finish off on this. Businesses must have already made a claim under the original scheme by the 31st of July in order to be part of this flexible furlough scheme. But more importantly, employees must have been previously furloughed for a period of 3 weeks on or before the 10th of June in order to be flexibly furloughed. So you can't get a new employee now that has never been furloughed going on flexible furlough because they won't meet those requirements. So just to recap on that, they've got to have been furloughed for 3 weeks at the beginning of the 10th of June or before for them to benefit from the flexible furlough scheme, the employee. The only other exception to that is those that have been on family leave. So, for example, where they might have been on maternity leave or paternity or adoption leave, or if they are an armed force reservist. Never get that word out. So that's some of the points for flexible furlough. Also, an employer can't claim for more employees from the 1st of July than they've claimed for under the old scheme. So if, for example, in the month of April, they'd claimed for 50 employees and the month of May, they'd claimed for 60 employees, going forward from July, 60 would be the maximum employees they could claim for, except for those that are coming back from maternity or armed force reservists. And finally, in terms of the claims and the way that the business goes about getting this money back from the government via the portal, any claims under the old scheme must be submitted by tomorrow. So if you're not onto that, you need to be. And then going forward, any claims for the month of July must be made in that calendar month. So we can't have a cross calendar month claim submitted. There's just a couple of other points I wanted to make that are slightly off track, but I think are worth noting. Many businesses are looking at potentially making employees redundant or terminating employees' employment for various reasons. The scheme allows employers to claim back the notice period and allow them to remain on furlough for the balance of that notice, as long as they are not paying them in lieu of notice and immediately bringing their employment to an end. So that's really helpful for businesses to be able to do that. It's also worth noting that for flexible furlough, businesses need to keep records of all of these. So businesses will need to have entered into a separate agreement with their employee in terms of the flexible furlough arrangement and what their, you know, what the arrangements are going to be. And we'll need to keep a record of that agreement, the amounts that the time that they've worked, the amount that they've claimed for each employee, etc. So all of this documentation must be retained and kept as a record for a minimum of 6 years. So we've also just had some news this morning that in terms of any statutory redundancy payments, they must be paid at the original rate of pay for that employee and not at the furlough rate or any flexible furlough rate that might be applicable. So I'm conscious I've spoke for quite a while there, but hopefully that's given you some real headline pointers for how the scheme has changed from the 1st of July.
Thank you, Sarah. It's much appreciated. I'd like to just turn to Leanne. Leanne, I know as Sarah's been explaining, we now have this new change in law and people being allowed to work part-time from a furlough perspective. What's your view about these changes from, you know, an employer-employee perspective?
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. Very, very eloquently put there. thanks, Paul. It's just such a... from my point of view, since March, the government have done, obviously we won't get political, but the government have offered the furlough scheme with great intention, and I think it's proven invaluable, certainly from JobWise's point of view, but also our clients' point of view, to utilise the scheme to retain jobs. And that is exactly what it's allowing us and our clients to do. So, for example, we have got a steady increase in business coming in now, so we can bring resource back as we see fit and as we need it, whilst obviously giving people that regular income that we all need to pay the rent and buy the food, with the idea that we can return the jobs. So it gives employers a whole different platform of flexibility, which is very, very invaluable to us and our clients. Phenomenal.
Well, thanks, Leanne. And I've worked with a business in New Zealand, and they had the sort of part-time flexible furloughing scheme from day one. Hearing about this when I was talking to my client in Auckland some weeks back. And I was wondering at the time why we hadn't got that flexibility here in the UK. The government have now introduced it. And I agree with you guys. I think it's a big positive plus point. And I think that, you know, it's enabling employers to start to integrate back into the workplace their people. It's very isolating if people have been at home for this elongated period of time. And you know, we're going to talk about this a bit later on, getting people back into work mode in the truest sense, feeling a part of the company from a cultural point of view, getting re-engaged with their colleagues, with their clients and so forth is really good news. And this enables, I think, organizations to be able to do that whilst being able to manage costs, but at the same time, being, as you've said, Leanne, being able to give people more income. You know, I think it's very good news. And I suspect that as we start moving through the year now, we'll hopefully start to see work improving for all businesses as we start to sort of come out of this awful lockdown situation that we've been incurring. So, yeah, I think it's very welcomed. I'm going to move to you again, Sarah, now. But yeah, another large question for you. So if I could just get the next slide up. So businesses are reopening and are having to implement changes in order to comply with government guidance on working safely. So we're going to talk about this subject at great length now. In your opinion, what do employers need to do in order to ensure they're compliant from this perspective?
Employers obviously have this legal responsibility to protect their workers from any risk to their health and safety. And obviously COVID-19 presents a risk to employees. And therefore it's for businesses to sit and think about what these risks are that are posed within their business. And of course, at the moment, businesses are all at different stages. Some have worked throughout and have had, you know, very little change in terms of the workforce, and others have been completely closed down and are only just beginning to start to think about opening. And I think there's a hybrid in the middle of businesses that have worked throughout but remotely and therefore haven't been touching their place of work. But businesses need to really sit and think and plan, if they've not already got people back in the workplace, about how they are going to make that safe. Or for those that have already got people back in the workplace, how they're going to continue to make that safe and change things on a trial and error basis going forward. But businesses need to do everything reasonably practicable to minimise those risks. And I think it is important for businesses to understand that they're never going to completely eliminate the risk of COVID-19. We wish we could, but I don't think anyone is in that position. So you're just doing as best you can in a reasonably practicable manner. So what do you need to do? Well, it's important that all businesses, no matter how small, have a tailored risk assessment document that works through what they consider the risks and how they're going to address those risks within their businesses. I think the Health and Safety Executive and the government as well, and a number of other organisations have said that for businesses with more than 5 employees, this should be a written document. But I think it should be written for everyone, and it's there to cover the employer to be able to show what they've done. So I think there's this overarching risk assessment that's needed. Businesses should also consider whether they should look at, you know, not necessarily for every member of staff, but for some individual staff risk assessment. So they may have employees that have been shielding that are at significant risk of the virus if they were to contract it. You know, we may have people that have suffered serious mental health breakdowns during lockdown because of isolation, or, you know, the loss of a family member due to COVID-19 during a lockdown. And, you know, and then on the lower end of the scale, we've got employees with issues of childcare and homeschooling. So it may be that there are certain risk assessments that are carried out based on employees. And I know, for example, I acted for a client who had an employee that was allergic to a hand sanitizer, and so they had to pick up and address that, and we did a specific assessment for that particular employee. But again, as I said earlier, there needs to be clear records of these risk assessments. And for businesses with 20 or more, these should be placed on your website so that it's transparent and people can see them. In terms of what should be in these risk assessments, you know, the government has produced a massive amount of guidance, an industry-specific type of guidance that talks about what businesses should be doing to minimise that risk. And, you know, some obvious things are to be deep cleaning the building, prior to opening on a regular basis, and all the particular points such as light switches and kettles and those objects that are regularly touched. But you've got social distancing and ideally keeping your employees at least 2 metres apart or 1 metre apart, or if that's not possible, having them face back to back rather than forward facing. You know, ventilation and what kind of PPE you might offer in terms of the masks and gloves, etc. So all these things need to be thought about and pulled together in a document, but that's stage one effectively, because it's then for businesses to consult with their staff about this, you know, and particularly for the businesses where they may have a vast number of employees out there on furlough that have not been back to work yet. They will have or are likely to have concerns about what the workplace looks like. So my advice would be that businesses really do try to engage with employees about, look, these are the measures we've put in place. These are the actions that we've taken to minimise the risk of health and safety. You know, they may even want to introduce a health and safety forum, but to chat through that. And you know, for those employees that are happy with it, well, that's fine, but they... You know, there may be other employees that you need to have specific meetings with to provide that reassurance and get their feedback on the changes that you're proposing. Employees might come up with other ideas that you've not thought of that will assist and minimise that risk. So clear message from me is that there needs to be, a risk assessment from a protection perspective. And there needs to be real and genuine consultation with your staff about what measures you're putting in place and keep, you know, that's a movable feast. It needs to keep changing over time so that all of these points are included. So just to pick up on the government guidance that we've seen, I think the guidance notes are called Working Safely During Coronavirus and have been created for businesses to use. And there's 8 of them that are industry specific. So I think there's some for construction, homes, restaurants, offices, vehicles even. And it's for businesses to go and look at that specific guidance and implement, you know, as much as or all of what they can on the back of what the government are providing. So yeah, my message on this one in terms of what businesses should be doing is plan, communicate, and make sure you've got a risk assessment that will cover you going forward. I've spoke to quite a few employers that have put together Zoom calls or Microsoft Teams calls with their staff just to have that dialogue in relation to the safety aspects. And it allows businesses then to say, look, these are the new procedures we've put in place. You know, here's a reminder of good hygiene practices, or, you know, if you have any specific concerns following this conference call, contact whoever within the workplace. So it creates that sort of human element and reassures their employees that they're doing all that they can. If employees do raise serious health concerns about the fact that the business isn't doing what it needs to be doing, then I think they need to be taking those concerns really seriously, because there are potential claims that employees can pursue if their health and safety isn't cared for in a reasonable manner. And as I said, employees do have a duty on that front. So yeah, and we've also got a document from the World Health Organization that sets out simple ways to prevent the spread within organizations and you know, what you can do for meetings and other suggestions that will make sure that businesses are compliant. So hopefully that gives everybody a good idea of what they need to be doing in order to keep their workplaces safe and their staff safe.
Thank you, Sarah. That's some brilliant pieces of information and great advice. That's absolutely outstanding. And I think all businesses, as you say, need to be very cognizant of their responsibilities to their staff in terms of bringing them back into a clean, safe, and healthy workspace, not just in the space itself, but also I think, correct me if I'm wrong, if people are going to be working from home, we also as employers need to make sure that they're perfectly safe in their own workspace at home too.
Yes.
And then of course, transport, getting in and out of work. All of these things have become very important to us.
Yeah.
Leanne, maybe you'd like to sort of add your points of view here as well.
Yeah, sure. I mean, what Sarah is talking about there is what I've certainly experienced from the human element point of view, actually sent out an internal survey to all our staff to ask them for their individual feedback on their feelings of the return to the workplace. And we found, you know, a little bit like the opening of the pubs, I think, where you had a certain percentage queuing up for that first pint, and then another percentage sat on the fence and not really that bothered, and then another percentage saying there's no way I want to go anywhere near a pub or an office anytime soon. So we then had individual one-to-ones with people, because I think everyone's lockdown journey has been different. Some have thoroughly enjoyed working from home. They really don't want to go back into an office. I think we've had some that are very anxious to come out again because of family or their own health conditions. And I mean, we've had some people that are really keen to get back to the office. In fact, we've had somebody, Lee, working in the office as soon as he possibly could because his setup at home wasn't working for him. So I think it's listening to the individual feedback and not treating everyone as one group. I think that's been really important. You know, the whole communication piece, we've had regular Zoom calls with the whole team. And we actually slowed the opening of the offices down a little bit following that consultation. So we were looking at opening the offices in August full time. But after talking to people and understanding their individual situations, not just from a childcare point of view, but from a feeling comfortable point of view, we've opened the offices. They are all COVID safe and ready to be used, but we've said use them as you want. And then we'll review again at the end of August to see how people feel. I think there's certainly we're missing that whole osmosis feeling of being together, of the buzz of the social aspect of working in a team. I think people, once they see the benefit of being back in there, will probably relish that.
Thanks, Leanne. I mean, I speak as somebody that's been going back into my clients' offices recently, and I can tell you, if you haven't done it since the lockdown, it's very uncomfortable. And you feel, you know, we're trying to keep that 2 meter distance. And naturally, people suddenly appear next to you. You find, you know, they're suddenly on your shoulder, or even I had a case of somebody wanted to hug me when I walked into an office quite recently, and I sort of leapt back in alarm. But you know, I found myself walking over. Someone said to me, "Can you come and have a look at something, Paul?" And I walked over and I was looking at their computer screen, and I realized I was literally leaning over them. And it's very difficult to try to maintain that discipline of keeping distance. One of the other things we've implemented is, and you may well have experienced this, you know, these thermometers that you hold to somebody from a distance, and you check their temperature. And in the office I was in on Monday, as people come in to work every day, their temperatures are checked. So it doesn't take long. And I think they're not very expensive, £40 or something. And if somebody has a temperature that's above normal or looking like it could be moving in the wrong direction, they're sent home. That hasn't happened yet, but I think it's a very good safety check. One other point I would make is that I've suggested with my clients that they bring in their own crockery, their plates, you know, their knives and forks and mugs and so forth, and they bring them in and take them home every day. Now, you can argue that, you know, obviously things are going often into dishwashers and they should be clean, but the ones that are in the cupboards, you don't know who's touched them or who opened a door and may have breathed over them. I mean, these are this is the detail that as employers we've really got to think through to protect our people. Mm-hmm. And making sure that you've got disinfectant wipes for the desks and keyboards and phones, all those things need to be thought through. And as Sarah said, there's a lot of good information out there now that you can access very easily. And if you're not sure, I'm sure Sarah would be more than pleased to provide you with those details.
Yeah.
So just a point for you guys listening today, following today's webinar, if you want to contact any of the speakers, Sarah, Leanne, or if you want to speak to me, you'll see our contact details at the end of the webinar, and feel free to pick up the phone or email us, and we'll do anything we can to help and support you during these difficult and challenging times. So I'm going to move on to the next question, if I may. So I know Lee's in the background. There he goes with my lovely slide. I'm going to start this. I'm going to go straight to Leanne with this question, Leanne. So, how aware of the mental well-being of our people should we be as we start to bring them back to the workplace? And what type of support and leadership should we be demonstrating at this time? So it's a big question. Sarah leaned into this a moment ago, and so did you, Leanne. The mental well-being of our people, how aware should we be now as managers and as owners and leaders?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. I mean, as the well-being of employees should be a strategic priority for all organisations at any time, let alone in the current lockdown pandemic situation. I think from, you know, not only from, is it an ethically right thing to do, but I think it also, how your employees feel will then subsequently be how your customers feel. So it's very important to keep a very, very close awareness of mental well-being and just generally how people are feeling. I think since the start of lockdown in March, I'm certainly hearing from various HR leaders and line managers that work-related stress and burnout have become increasingly important issues for them. And I think it's hard to see, particularly with people working remotely, they may not necessarily spot in themselves that they're struggling. And because you're not working with somebody day to day, it's hard to spot remotely. So I think, you know, having regular one-to-ones at the start of any Zoom meeting or video meeting, allowing a bit of time for a bit of informality, I think that's really important. You know, you don't quite get the same as you do face-to-face, I don't feel, on a video. So I think creating that space for people to actually, you know what, tell me how you're really feeling today is really important. And I've got to say, I don't think I've spoken to my staff as much as I have in the last 16 weeks. I've constantly got a phone stuck to my ear and just, you know, ringing them for any reason. I'm finding out lots about them, what's going on in their life. Really, really important to do that. And I think, like I mentioned before, everyone's lockdown journey has been very different. So asking the right questions, finding out what is worrying them, you know, are they thinking of going away, have they got any holidays booked, you know, just understanding where they're coming from is key. I mean, JobWise are an Investors in People gold standard employer. I don't mind being proud there and saying that. So we absolutely appreciate that the people in the business are our business, but even more so now that we should really be close to those guys that are ultimately giving the service to your customers. I do like the three C's of collaborate, communicate and cooperate as a team. So I tend to hang my hat on that. You know, the collaboration is really important. Understanding what's going on for them, communicating. I think if there's any lack of transparency, it creates anxiety. So I think if there's any questions going on behind the scenes, I do have a tendency to find out and then I want to deal with it and, you know, and communicate with the people. And then I think the last part of that question, Paul, what type of support and leadership should we be demonstrating at this time? Emotional intelligence is really important to a great leader at any time, really. But I think it even more so now, you know, be authentic, show empathy. You know, if you can share what's going on for you to make you human, share that. Positive, calm, reassuring. But I think also having to be quite directive. There have been occasions where, you know, guys are perhaps a little bit unsure what the next should be, and you have to guide them and reassure them through the next phase. And asking for ideas from people as well. I think, again, you know, I'm certainly never one to think I know it all. Very, very open to suggestions. And some of the suggestions have come from, or the best suggestions have come from our guys. I mean, talking about giving people a return to the office kit, we've given everyone a lunch box where they can bring the lunch in each day with an ice pack so they don't have to use the fridge. We've even supplied visors. I know we don't have to in an office, but if people feel more comfortable using the visors. So asking, listening to what people are saying and then acting on it is really important. But I just think keeping calm is also quite important. So even if you don't quite feel calm, you know, exuding calmness will create that calm feeling in your teams.
Thanks, Leanne. I think those are brilliant points. I mean, I'll just add to that. I think that, you know, if people have been in lockdown and have been at home for some lengthy period of time now, that you should expect that they're going to be feeling a level of fear and trepidation about work coming back to the workplace, because, you know, they've been in this cocoon for a period of time now. And with that, I think, comes that sense of security. And we're now looking to take them out of that situation, what has now become the normal for them, back to what they considered to be the normal in the past. And with that, I think there's a whole range of triggers, psychological, even physiological, that can kind of heighten a sense of sensitivity and distress. And I think as we bring people in, we should become aware of that. You made a very, very good point about one-to-one conversations with people. If you get people on a Zoom call, like this one, for example, they'll listen and there'll be some generic conversation, but people are very unlikely to expose their emotions, their deep sense of security or insecurity to you. And you do need those one-to-one conversations with your people, particularly as we bring them back. And that, I think, is particularly true potentially of the furloughed staff rather than the people that have been working during this period, because people obviously, there are some people that have continued to work during the downtime, the lockdown, and others that have been furloughed and have not been allowed to work under the conditions of the furlough scheme. So now we're bringing people back, both those that have worked and those that have been furloughed. And you're absolutely right to say you really need to be very close to them to understand their feelings. We were talking just before we came on live on this particular webinar about our feelings. And I was saying that, you know, going back into the office is a kind of, it's not shocking, that's too strong a word, but it's kind of, you feel on your nerve ends a little bit. You know, it's not like it used to be. And it may be a while before we get back to that sense of security. So people need to feel a sense of safety around them, not just, of course, because of this, but because that's the way they need to feel in their daily lives. And I think as employers, we have a very large level of responsibility now to create that safety net, if you like, those safety measures around people. We've just been making reference to how we make sure the workplace is clean to the best of our ability, wiping down handles, making sure taps are clean. I talked about crockery and mugs and that kind of thing. Anything we can do to make it easier for people is very important. I think there's also the case that during this period of time when people have been at home and have been allowed, sort of, especially furloughed people, to start to think, to ruminate about their lives, which is what most of us have done over the last 4 months. Some people will be excited about getting back to work, really up for it, can't wait. You've said that already. Other people may well have been over the last 4 months or so thinking, you know what? Do I really want this job? Do I want to carry on working in this business? You know, we know that. Unfortunately, we're going into a recessionary economy. There's been a huge amount of talk about that recently. I don't think it's a shocking or provocative thing to say now that we're going to see a level of redundancies coming. It's in the news. Everybody knows that's going to happen. Hopefully, it's not for very long. We'll see a spike. And then as we get into next year, we'll start to see employment rising again. Because let's not forget that this is a humanitarian crisis. It wasn't caused by an economic crisis. So we will see a period of time with companies laying staff off, unfortunately, not every company, but some companies. And then hopefully, and I'm pretty sure of it personally, then the new year in 2021, we'll start to see the economy recovering as we go through it. But, you know, people will be worried about their job security. Are they coming back to a job? What kind of job will they have? Some people, as I've already said, will be thinking, do I actually want to go back to that job? Maybe now's the time to make a change. Now, you'll only find those things out when you have those one-to-one conversations with people. And having a group conversation is very important. You know, heightening your communication with your people becomes extremely important, but those intimate one-to-one conversations become very important to you. And if you can't do those in this manner, using a Zoom call, then I really do urge you as employers to go and meet your staff. It may be difficult to go into their homes even now, but meet them somewhere. If it's a nice day like today, outside, have a conversation. I saw several looking out the window. It may be that it's sunny here in London, but I don't know what it's like up with you guys.
It's nice, yeah, it is.
So thank God for that.
not just the South,
I'm glad to hear that. But I think there's, you know, if you can meet people face to face, I would urge you to do that rather than these kind of calls. There's a place for these calls and they work brilliantly, I might add. All of us have got used to using Zoom and Skype and Teams and so forth, and it's been great. And we've all got stories about our grandparents and our aunts and uncles who have become adept at using things like this. But it's still no substitute for good old-fashioned one-to-one face-to-face conversation. So, you know, if you can't get your guys to come and see you, go and see your people, because I think that shows you, as back to Leanne's point, you care, that you're expressing a level of empathy towards them. And just, I think, a final few points. You know, as leaders, as managers, it's fine to express your own emotions, you know, and empathize with people. If people know that you have similar concerns, similar worries, there's nothing weak about that. The fact that you empathize with their position strengthens their sense of loyalty, I think, towards you. You know, don't try and be aloof and above it all. We all have these concerns and worries. This is not the common cold. You know, this is a life-threatening disease, and everybody, to some degree, have felt extremely anxious and worried about it. And as leaders, there is nothing wrong with you expressing your own concerns. As I say, I think that draws people into you rather than pushing people away from you. So I feel that demonstrating a level of empathy, using emotional intelligence in this situation, is extremely important as we start to move away from this current situation of lockdown back into the work mode. And some people, of course, as we've talked about, will work part-time in the office, a few days a week, or 1 week on, 1 week off, or shift systems, coming in early, leaving early, coming in later, leaving later. All of those things will be going through very soon. But the world of work that we're going back into is going to be nothing like the world of work we left in March. And it may never be the same again. Now, you can look at that two ways. You can look at it negatively, or you can take a very positive view, which is the way I've been viewing it, in that I think that it enables us to give people better work-life balances as we go forward. Lots of people have really enjoyed working from home, but have missed the workplace, missed the camaraderie of being with their colleagues, having a natter over the photocopier or at lunch. All those things, the socialization that goes with work, are very important. So if people are going to continue to work from home, part-time or full-time, getting them integrated into your business, back into the culture of your company, becomes a challenge, but a very interesting and very positive challenge for us all. And I think what emerges as we go forward is perhaps a better work-life balance for most of us than we had pre-COVID. I think there'll be lots of very positive outcomes to this. But as leaders, it's important for us to grasp this, get close to our people, as Leanne was rightly saying. So Sarah, I'd be interested in your views too around this subject.
You know, I think both you and Leanne have covered, you know, so many vital points there and so many important points. And it's commendable, Leanne, from your perspective of what you've done at JobWise and how you've approached it. And that, you know, communication. And I think that's the theme of everything we've talked about today. I think you mentioned about transparency. And if people are fearful and things aren't open and aren't discussed, then that just breeds fear. So for me, I would just echo the messages that you've made in terms of having that open communication. And again, not always having it online, because there might be people that aren't au fait with Teams. They won't even know what Teams is. And I think one other point that I've noticed is there seems to be a little bit of a divide for those that have remained working in the business throughout and are actually potentially at burnout now because they've been doing work for 3, 4, 5 people, and those that are perceived to have been on furlough having a long rest, when actually, you know, it's been difficult for both sides, probably in equal measures. And it's important, I think, as we're bringing our employees back and with this flexible furlough, to tie all that together and bring the team together as one, you know, to not have this divide almost of, well, I carried the business whilst it was going through difficulty and you sat at home. I think, you know, it's been very tough for people who have been furloughed in many instances. So yeah, just echo those points. And I think the point you made, Leanne, is absolutely vital just in general as leadership. Treat everybody as an individual and go at their pace, you know, because some people are completely fine with this situation and others are terrified, you know, genuinely terrified for their family or their lives, you know, and just because you may not feel how they feel doesn't mean that their feelings aren't valid and shouldn't be taken into account. And I think as employers, you should be doing what you can to alleviate those concerns and help them and work with them to get them to a place where they're comfortable carrying out the work they need to do.
Thank you, Sarah. I completely concur with your thoughts. And I'll sort of finish this particular point with another, I think, essential piece of advice. And that is to the people out there, the owners and the leaders of businesses. You know, we're talking about the support that we need to give to our people, our colleagues. My question is, what support are you getting? Who are you talking to? Who's providing you with support? Who are you opening your soul out to? Are you being mentored? Do you have somebody that you can be open and honest with that will take care of you? Because if you have, that's great, because we all need to talk. We all need to talk to somebody we trust. And if you haven't got somebody like that around you, my best advice is find somebody. There are people that provide mentoring and counseling services. And if you're also suffering from anxiety around the current situation, don't bottle it up, because that's a very, very serious thing to do. Seek help, seek advice, and you will find that once you've got somebody you can trust that you can talk to, then you're getting that weight off your shoulders. You're unburdening yourself. And I think that's very important. Your mental well-being is essential as much as anybody else's. And in particular, if you're leading a business and other people are watching you and listening to you and you're leading by example, then perhaps it's arguable, but perhaps you need even more support and assistance and support than your guys are getting. So keep that all in mind. Let's not think this is a small thing. This is a once in a lifetime experience. You know, it's been a major event, and in years to come we'll all be telling our grandchildren about what we went through. So let's not make light of it. It's a very important thing. Okay, I'll turn to our final question, please, Lee, if you don't mind putting up the slide, which I think is kind of naturally leads in from the last question that we've just been discussing about communication. So I'm going to, again, start with you, Leanne, with this, if you don't mind. Regarding communication, what techniques should we use to manage our staff effectively if some of them remain in a work-from-home position? Or indeed, as I mentioned earlier, a split work from home and office situation. How would you provide advice regarding communication?
Yeah, great. Thanks, Paul. I mean, using the JobWise example, in that over the course of August, we're going to have some people working out of the office, some people working from home. Since March the 23rd, I think it was, we've been doing a morning call every single morning, the whole company. So we've got three sites, but we've done it as one company. Morning call, everyone gets together and talks about stuff, whether that's personal or work related. We've changed the theme each day. And that's been really, really useful to keep the spirits up, share small successes, which again, I think is really important. But as we evolve and try and get back to some kind of normality, I think, you know, we decided to keep that morning call each morning. So whether someone's in the office or at home, they're dialing into the same conference call. I think that's quite important. So that's one thing we're doing in August. And then as we move forward into perhaps people being in the offices more full time, I think weekly meetings in each team, which I will try and attend and go to each office, obviously all socially distanced, regular updates on email, regular video conferencing. I think it's just that regularity of communication is key, and consistency, keeping it consistent. So if it's a daily call, it's a daily call. If it's a weekly meeting, it's a weekly meeting. Giving people opportunities to have a platform to ask questions or share the views, I think that's really, really important.
Thanks, Leanne. I think that's brilliant advice and information. And I'll perhaps pick up on a few of your points, if I may. Well, you talk about heightened communication. And I think at any time of crisis, the thing that all good leaders do is they increase the volume of communication, you know. And so what we call in our industry, you know, morning scrums. So, you know, that that virtual meeting first thing in the morning where you're saying, hi, everybody, you know, and I attend them every day. What did you eat for dinner last night? What did you see on the telly? And that kind of just silly things, but, you know, creates that sense of culture, creates that sense of family. I think it's really important. Some people may say it's a bit trivial, but I don't think it is. I think it's important people get that chance to chit chat and have a giggle, because that's
we all remember the quizzes at the start of lockdown, that those Friday night quizzes that I think a lot of people got really fed up of, but
it's true.
Quite important.
It is important. And, you know, even more important when people are at a distance, I think. And so, but also to use those scrums in the morning to talk about, well, what are your plans for the day? What are we going to try to achieve today? What support, what help do you need? And a lot of the companies I work with have midday catch-ups briefly and end-of-day mop-ups. And I think you might say, well, that seems a bit over the top. But I think if people are working from a virtual distance, as it were, heightening that communication, I think, becomes extremely important. And just to pick up on a few points you've made, if you're working at home and good things happen, nobody hears it. So, you know, you kind of go, yeah, yeah, and you do a bit of a fist pump when something great happens, but there's no one around you that says, hey, that was brilliant, you know? And I think that you made a really good point, you know, celebrate success. And actually, under normal circumstances, when you're working together, a small success wouldn't necessarily be something everyone would jump up and shout and scream about. But under these circumstances, even little triumphs, I think, should be celebrated as much as winning something very large. Do you know what I'm trying to say here? So I think, you know, looking for reasons to say as employers, as leaders, well done, and perhaps much more than you would have done sitting next to somebody, I think becomes very important.
Absolutely, Paul. I mean, we sent little gifts out to our staff at certain times of the lockdown. So they got a little chocolate box celebrating 100 days of lockdown. Appreciation cards, we've been posting those out regularly, so looking for things that people are doing and going, you know, going the extra mile, handwriting a card from their line manager. And I agree, I mean, celebrating successes, is it scientifically proven to release endorphins? So at the moment, you know, with the slower business, you know, it is slower for a lot of the economy. The little success that we can celebrate will increase the buzz of the team. So absolutely agree there that celebrating any little success.
And I think we've talked a lot about, you know, looking after people as leaders, as managers, making sure we're taking care of our people. But, you know, one of the other things you can look at doing in your business is creating a mentoring system, a buddy system. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a boss, you know, there is this natural distance that is sometimes essential, but perhaps some employees, some of your colleagues may find it more difficult to talk to you as a boss about some of the things they think are fairly trivial, but actually from your point of view, you see as very important. And why not look at a mentoring system within your business that has nothing to do with seniority, where you're buddying up people so that they can look after one another? And I, you know, I've got plenty of experience of setting these systems up. I think they work extremely well. And often people in your business will put their hands in the air when you ask if you would like to be a mentor. You can provide them with training to enable them to be highly qualified mentors. And it's something I think people take on board and want to do without necessarily seeking any kind of reward for it, because there is no financial reward that you give to people that want to be mentors in your business. That's, if they want that, then they're the wrong people to be mentors. Mentoring is something you provide because you want to give of yourself, you want to give of your knowledge, you want to support others. It's something that is part of your, if you like, your DNA. And if you're prepared to do that and look after a colleague and you can find someone that would do that for you, then great. You don't necessarily need external assistance. So it's something I think to look at as part and parcel of how we go back into the workplace. And I think creating this very transparent, open communication isn't something that is purely for this period of time. You know, we talk often about employer value proposition, EVP as it's called these days, which is around how you want your customers to see your business, your organization, and that culture needs to be completely replicated internally. So depending on how you want your customers to see you, working within the business needs to be exactly the way you would perceive it to be if you were looking from the outside in. So as an employee, that experience is the same. And it takes a lot of working on. But part of that is very much this open communication that I think is so vital for modern businesses, that people are invited to give their opinions, invited to provide ideas. Their ideas are welcomed and often acted upon. And I think those things become extremely important as we move forward. This is the opportunity that we, in many respects, didn't want, i.e. we didn't want a pandemic, but we now have the opportunity to realign the way in which we communicate with our people to get this much more open level of communication and to enhance our employer value proposition. Is that your view as well, Sarah? Is that how you would see the situation?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as I said before, communication is key. I've been looking at communication as well from the perspective of being clear about what your policies are now going forward with your staff. So, for example, with home working, you know, many people at the start of lockdown picked up their laptops or computers, took them home and just started to work from home and slowly got into a routine. But I think it's important for businesses to set out, potentially in a home working policy, what is the new norm? Because we've got a whole area that I've been, again, advising many businesses on. Excuse me, I've got hay fever and I'm having a current hay fever attack pandemic. But yeah, I think being clear about what the parameters are for home working is vital, because, you know, people have been working from home permanently. Is that going to continue for you? How often should you be in the office or workplace? You know, that kind of message is key. And obviously, communication comes in line with consultation as well. We've heard from you, Leanne, as to how you've consulted with staff on the safety measures. But if you were looking at changes to terms and conditions as a new point going forward, or redundancy, then there would be an obligation to consult with employees. And obviously, you know, communication is a vital part of that, of sitting down and having those meetings with staff and getting their views on these issues going forward. So yeah, I think there's communication on all levels, isn't there? There's the how are you, making sure from a well-being perspective that things are good. There's the one-to-ones to ensure the performance is on track, and, you know, there's the ensuring that they're not getting too lonely at home. But there's also communication about bigger issues within the business and making sure that businesses are doing that, so that employees aren't anxious in the background of not knowing what's going on.
I think you make a brilliant point, Sarah. And one of the things I've been saying to people is that if you think of this as being a pause button rather than a stop button, and we're now pushing the play button again, I'm talking analog, not digital here, I think. then I think that what we have to do as managers, as leaders, as owners, is once again talk about the aims and the goals of our businesses. Where are we going? And create that vision again. Leaders need a vision. You have to convey your vision for the future to the people that work with you. And, you know, if you can do that, you articulate it constantly and how exciting the future looks, then there's no reason to feel that your people, as they come back to work, will be frightened of the future prospects of your business, because here is an opportunity to re-galvanize morale, to really get people up for it, if I can use that expression, and start to get them to understand where the business is driving towards. Because even during recessions, businesses flourish. You know, some of the companies that we know today as sort of worldwide brands, people like Microsoft or Apple, even Walt Disney, were actually commenced business during recessions, and in Disney's case, during the Great Depression. And yet, you know, they're world famous brands now, brands we all revere. And for all of our businesses, there's an opportunity here to really use this moment as a springboard to develop our businesses further and gain greater market share and really give our people an opportunity to develop their careers and accelerate their opportunities. So I think that as leaders, we have a great opportunity through communication, not just to make sure that, as we should be, we're looking after them and we're allaying fears and getting them back into the workplace, but also a chance to give them a sense that the business is in fine fettle, that we're very confident about the future. And although we may have got a sort of slight pause for 4 to 6 months on our plans, the reality is that was that a pause and it wasn't a stop. And we're going again. And in fact, this time we're really going to drive forward to create a better future for ourselves and for you and your families. And I think those are the messages that we as leaders need to put forward. Now, I'm acutely aware, guys, that we're into the last 30 seconds of our webinar, which is a great shame. I really hope for everybody that's been listening to us that you've thoroughly enjoyed today. We intend to run these webinars on a monthly basis. And I want to say a huge thank you to Sarah Collier of KBL. Thank you so much, Sarah. You've been brilliant and your advice has been outstanding. Thank you so much. And I know Sarah would be more than pleased to take any questions from you. You can see on the screen right now, there's Sarah's mobile number and her email address is there as well. Feel free to contact Sarah. And a huge thank you to Leanne as well. Leanne, brilliant contribution. Thank you. Jobwise is an outstanding recruitment business in the Northwest. I said the Northeast before we started this and I got told off. That's because I'm a Southerner and obviously I don't know my geography as well, but it's a brilliant business, Jobwise. So feel free to reach out to Leanne, any advice you need around your employees or any roles or you need some assistance with. And it's a big thank you from me as well, Paul Jacobs from Love Work Life Consulting. Thank you again for listening to us all. We wish you a great week ahead and keep safe. And we look forward to speaking to you again.
And that's thanks. Thank you, Paul. Thanks, guys. Thank you. Nice to see you.